Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Short Allen. I'm here with co-host, dear friend, and producer, Stu Schrager. Start producing.
Am I really here? You look perplexed when I say that.
What's that?
Am I really here?
Oh, you're really here, yeah.
Because last week we had a terrible production.
Faux pas. Yes.
And we were not able to air an incredible show that was scheduled to air last Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday.
Yeah, we had a Super Bowl show. I actually picked the winner, which was not too hard, really, you know. Been the best team, I guess, all year, you know. But, you know, it's funny. Today, it's... I think right now it's something like 30 degrees, 27 degrees, 28 degrees. It feels like T-shirt weather to me, you know, compared to what it's been.
That's interesting you say that, because yesterday I was at a political event. And
you do a lot of those.
I do. Yeah. I do. It's the means by which I make money.
You're very political.
So parking was a little crazy, so it was a little bit away from the venue. And I parked on the street, and I didn't want to, as they say, schlep my coat in with me.
Yeah.
So I left it in the car and walked into the Garden City Hotel.
I love that.
And place. It was like shirt sleeve weather, just like you said. I wasn't chilly.
No. You get acclimated to that like 12 below zero thing, and then 20 feels like summer, you know.
But it was cold the past couple of days. I had occasion to go from the car into a building or whatever, not a long walk.
Yeah.
And in 13 degree weather, my hands were cold.
Oh, yeah, it's chilly. I don't wear gloves all that much, but I've been wearing them lately. It's been that cold. I guess we get a spell like that every once in a while. It's winter, what are you going to do, you know?
Well, people complain about the weather. I don't necessarily complain. I like change, I like the fact,
right?
I like seasons.
Yeah.
To be able to enjoy the winter, I think there's beauty in fresh fallen snow. Fortunately, I'm able to handle the shoveling.
Uh-huh.
And enjoy it, actually. It's sort of mind over body that I can accomplish it.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lord above's been good to me.
Yeah, yeah. Good for
that
you.
I can handle it. And again, it was quite a challenge this time, because the way the snow fell, the first, I guess it was a Sunday.
Yeah.
I was out there like four times shoveling. Woke up that Monday, needed to do a little bit of a cleanup. Ended up coming over to the radio station for a while. I think I was the only salesperson here. One of the managers was here. Went out to Merrick to fine-tune Kerry's property.
Yeah.
Luckily, her neighbors are very generous in their labor.
The snow blowing.
Yeah, so it was pretty good job. Needed a little bit of work, but got it done. And then I think it took till Tuesday or Wednesday. I think I had to take my mom to a doctor's appointment, and her neighbors were really good to her also. But the last hurrah left it with no way out of the house. So I had to dig a path from the garage to the street.
Yeah.
And the curb was, I got to admit, it was pretty bad. It was probably 3 feet high, four or five feet wide.
Yeah.
So I had to dig through that, but then made a nice cut. And then I think I came back a couple of days later to like really give it a once over.
And
I think last Friday, finalized it. The car was clean and everything. The casualty of war is the battery went on Mom's car, but we got that done pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And now we're ready for the next battle.
It's funny. It's how this is a microcosm of life in America. You know, I've dealt with immigrant labor my whole life. Being in the restaurant business, you get a lot of immigrant labor. A lot of Central American kids and South American kids, I've had Filipinos and Indians, and you know, it's kind of the kitchen's a melting pot, which is kind of cool. So you get a lot of different perspectives, but. I had offered my neighbor's two teenage kids, you know, $50 a piece to shovel my driveway. And they looked at me like I was out of my mind. No, thank you. Meanwhile, I got three Spanish kids marching down the street with street shovels who were happy to do it for half of that, you know. And I gave them $50 each, you know, for the three of them. They were thrilled, you know, shoveled out everything. And they added the walkway as a tip, you know. I mean, just... a whole different headset between the American workers and the immigrant workers. It's hilarious.
No, and that story, actually, it's so funny. A neighbor, like, on the corner from where I live, at one point there was, like, an inch of snow. It was powder. The guy had his snowblower out.
Well, if you got it, right, you're going to use it, I guess.
I don't know. I mean, I heard stories about people using leaf blowers these days and stuff.
I've heard stories about people having heart attacks, too, you know, the other side of the story.
Yeah,
you know?
That's true. There was a retired police officer in Floro Park that I believe had cardiac arrest.
Yeah,
and,
shoveling. But, you know, as kids, I mean, I remember my friend, my best friend in the whole world when I was like, 10 was Steve Wojcinski, and Steve and I used to, you know, we'd pray for snow, and as soon as it started snowing, we had the snow shovels out, we were banging on doors, can we shovel your driveway, your walkway, whatever, washing cars in the summer, raking leaves, you know, all of that stuff that kids don't seem to have any interest in anymore. You know?
That reminds me of, I was responsible for cutting the lawn at my parents' house when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I guess they threw me a couple of bucks, or it was my allowance, I don't remember. Yeah. Mom usually was not too satisfied with the quality of my work.
Well, she could hold back some money, hopefully, you know, until you got it right. You know? My parents, on the other hand, were charging me rent to live there. You know, it's hilarious. Anyway, I guess, you know, rumor has it, you know, speaking of cold weather, let's talk about something warmer. I heard you had like this kind of major, what would I call it, Bacchanalian session at Smokin' Al's.
We did. So we again, this is part of the content that was our audience missed from last week because the show never aired. But one of the guys in the office, Eric Schwartz, celebrated his birthday. He works with Smokin' Al's, with Al for his marketing at the restaurant. And we headed over there, I guess a group of eight of us. And it was just an incredible evening. It was great to have the camaraderie of my coworkers. Nice to celebrate Eric's birthday. But Al was on a mission. Through me, he wanted you to know about what he can put out.
I guess I got to go down there.
And he admitted that you had been there. He was a little perturbed that the Tom persona was to say hello to Al in his absence through his son.
Yeah.
But not until after the meal was done. You like to pay your own way.
Yes, I do.
So at any rate, but the meal was incredible. It started with like a sampler platter that was like burnt ends and different just
the
small pieces.
And pulled pork and all that.
Yeah, and
the whole barbecue menu.
It was crazy. And then in the middle was barbecued shrimp. I've never had shrimp over at Smokin' Al's. And it was really cool because it was actually on a bed of rice.
Uh-huh.
So that was that. And then we had ribs. There were a couple of different types of ribs. Huge platter. I'm talking about a platter that was more than 12 inches long.
Yeah, whole rack.
You know, probably about six inches wide.
Did you have the St. Louis ribs or the baby backs?
We had everything.
No, you had it all. Oh, good for you, man.
We had everything.
Are they open for lunch? I may go there after
they
we take
are.
This.
They yeah. are. And then the sides were incredible. You know, always the cornbread, but there was collard greens, there was baked beans, there was coleslaw, mashed potatoes. It was just... again, out of control. There were wings, and then when you didn't think he could do any better, he pulls out the Bow Wow Wow.
A Bow Wow Wow. Oh,
which,
do
which
tell.
is a 12-inch hot dog in a roll. Probably the size of a sausage in girth. And that was on a plate that was set in a plate surrounded by crispy onions.
Oh boy.
And fries. I believe there was chili and coleslaw, and it was huge. And it brought me back to the days of my youth. I lived in Oceanside, in town over, Rockwell Center. There was a Jan's ice cream parlor.
I remember Jan's,
called the kitchen sink, which was a huge vessel.
It's a sundae, right?
It was like an elaborate copper soup pot. Like, it was crazy. And it probably held 30 scoops of ice cream with different syrups and whipped cream and cherry and everything.
Yeah.
But the legacy there was that nobody could finish it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it wasn't unusual for somebody to say, hey, the table next to me, would you like to finish this off? But that's what it was with this Bow Wow Wow platter. It was absolutely crazy. We cut it in half, and I brought it over to the table next to us. It was a mother and father and three kids or whatever. And they thought I was crazy, but after they finished it,
they
were pretty thankful. But and again, the first platter that we got was actually the poo-poo platter.
How do you spell it? Because if it's O-O-H, I'm not having it.
No.
P-U-P-U, please?
Yeah, something like that. And it was funny. I tried to be a wise guy, and I said, hey, there's no brisket here. He goes, well, what do you think's in the middle of the poo-poo platter?
Brisket.
And even brisket he has as slices, or there's like chopped up pieces of brisket.
Pulled
pork and there's pulled chicken. It really was
like a banquet.
It was like the Last Supper.
Yeah.
It was really, Al, thank you so much, and I hope you believe that I obviously shared this the efforts put forth by you, and thank you for the sponsorship of the radio show.
It also shows, you know, I've always said this, there's something about restaurant people that there's a generosity of spirit there that you don't find in an awful lot of other endeavors. I mean, you know, we're the ones that are always being tapped for these fundraisers, you know, food and wine. People realize that you can make a lot of money with food and wine, or at least raise a lot of money with food and wine. And, you know, most of the people are happy to participate and do it. I find that restaurant owners and chefs in particular are very generous with their time and their product, you know, as far as, you know, raising money for causes. And even feeding somebody is, you know, the ultimate act of generosity. You know, you feed a homeless guy, you feed a friend, or, you know, somebody who's down on their luck. I mean, that's the ultimate act of generosity, is you're giving not only of yourself, but of what you have, and you're sharing. And, you know, what could be more, you know, like godlike than that, really, you know?
So again, thank you, thank you, Al. Another interesting notice, we also have a second sponsor of Playing With Fire.
And I heard that rumor, yeah.
Barry Manilow.
Yeah.
Barry Manilow is performing his last Long Island concert at UBS Arena on April 13th. And his management team came to us and said, we'd love to sponsor Playing With Fire.
Wow.
And not only that, they provided us with some tickets that for the next 4 weeks we will offer to our audience, one pair a week. And the way we're going to do it is we're going to play a Barry Manilow song. And if the listeners choose to email us at fire@whli.com, they will be able to be in the running for a pair of tickets for Barry Manilow, April 13th at UBS Arena.
So I have a question. When you play that song, are you going to just like play the first five notes, or are you going to play the whole song?
I think we're going to play the whole song.
Because, I mean, it's a dead giveaway. At some point, the name of the song is going to come up, right?
Well, that's good. It's we want everybody to have a shot at winning.
I don't know if you noticed, but he started out as a jingle writer. He was writing commercials. And then, you know, like every other musician, struggling, I'm sure, you know. And then, boom, he wrote I Write the Songs. I think that was his first hit, if I'm not mistaken, back in the 70s, you know.
It might have been Mandy. But that's
it might have been Mandy.
But that's
right,
a good thing. So I love this idea that we're having the contest. And again, we're going to play the song in a minute. And if you know the name of it, just send us an email at fire@whli.com. Also, as a, like a homework assignment, we'd love to hear from the listeners about what their favorite Barry Manilow song might be.
Absolutely.
So if you were at the concert and Barry was yelling out, "Who wants to hear a song? Tell me." So let us know. And we're just curious to hear the different songs that our listeners like and know of Barry Manilow's library. And then also, if anybody's familiar with Smokin' Al's, and there must be a lot of people familiar with Smokin' Al's,
sure.
I'd love to know what their favorite food is, what their favorite entree or appetizer or platter is at Smokin' Al's. And again, it's fire@whli.com. And one last extra credit research question.
You remind me of my ninth grade English teacher here.
If you are on your way to see Barry Manilow in concert on April 13th at UBS Arena, what restaurant off-premise from UBS Arena would you contemplate going to? Now, you might want to go to a restaurant that's in your hometown, but for some reason feels right for you and your other half to have a meal before going to see Barry.
About a 5-mile radius. We got to put some parameters on this, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
And then I guess UBS Arena is in Elmont Floral Park area.
Yeah.
But it's also on the border of Queens. You got the Cross Island between Queens and Nassau County. Again, throw us some ideas about what an interesting option is for dining on your way to UBS Arena. So again, all these different assignments and the opportunity to win tickets to Barry Manilow is accomplished by writing to us at fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com.
Okay, now we're going to have recess, all right?
We're going to take a quick break in the sense that we're going to play the song. So sit back, enjoy, and then again, you're going to write to us at fire@whli.com, so you're in the running to wear a pair of tickets.
Wear a pair of tickets?
Win a pair of tickets.
That's what I thought. You get thrown out of the Coliseum, I mean the UBS Arena, wearing a pair of tickets.
I'm not the guy that has the ability to get thrown out of a restaurant or a venue.
I shall tell you a story when we're back.
I am music and I write the songs. I write the songs that make the whole world sing. I write the songs of love and special things. I write the songs that make the young girls cry.
Oh,
Barry Manilow. See him performing all the hits for one night only. Barry Manilow, UBS Arena, April 13th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Playing with Fire on 1100 WHLI AM and 104.7 WHLI FM, Long Island's home for food, wine, and lifestyle, with your host, Tom Shawdell, chef, author, and restaurateur.
And notorious for being tossed out of restaurants for my garb. It's, you know, for those of you who've been listening to the show or know me, you know that I've been tossed out of a couple of restaurants. And I was at John George in the city, and I actually got past the hostess, and I was seated at the bar before they came over. The hostess and one of the bouncers came over and asked me to leave because I was wearing Crocs. And they said, you can't be in here with slippers on. I said, why would I wear slippers in January? I don't have slippers on. They're Crocs, but they happen to be fur-lined. No, sir, they're slippers. You have to leave. All right, well, it's your $800. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. So I went around the block and had a great dinner at Maria. And then I was unceremoniously thrown out of a Greek restaurant, Plori. And the story behind that, briefly, I'll give you the Reader's Digest version, was Val, my other half, was working there as a bartender, and they brought a new manager in, and he didn't want any more part-time people. So he unceremoniously fired her on New Year's Eve while she was having dinner with her family, which I thought was kind of in poor taste. And so did Val, and I think she might have said something off color about his mother and then got herself so unceremoniously tossed out of me, barred from the place. So I, you know, we went in a couple of months later thinking everybody's healed, and there wasn't anybody in the place either. It was like two people in the place, 7:30 on a, I guess, Monday or Tuesday. And the bartender informed us that he couldn't serve us, which I thought was kind of cowardly. I mean, if you're going to throw me out, do it yourself. Don't have some kid do it, you know. And it was fine. I mean, I didn't really care, you know. So I was in San Francisco last week. You know, I went to Napa. I was there for 5 days. And the last night I wanted to do something a little special. So we went to San Francisco. We're going to stay the last night in San Francisco and have dinner there. So I look up this place, Acquerello, A-Q-U-E-R-E-L-L-O. And it's a two-star Michelin restaurant. I think, okay, that'll be a nice little finale to the trip. And so I called that day to confirm my reservation, and I get a hostess who sounded like she was, you know, young girl, you know, late teens, early 20s. And she confirms my reservation and says, are you aware, sir, of our dress code? And I'm like, no. Would you like to hear about it? Yeah, sure. So she goes, well, you know, jackets are suggested but not required. No T-shirts, no hoodies, no ripped up jeans, and no sneakers. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm good on all that. I said, in a moment of full disclosure, I decided to tell her that I have Crocs. They're not sneakers. So I said, you know, I don't have sneakers, but I do have Crocs. She goes, we would prefer that you leave the Crocs home. I said, well, I prefer not to because my home is 3,000 miles away. It's really the only thing I have other than socks. So, you know, what are we going to do? And then the phone cut out because the reception was bad. So I call her back. She said, maybe we can make an exception. And then the phone cut out. I'm thinking, okay, that's cool. So I call her back just to, you know, finish the conversation. And I said, you know, I can't, I'm the guy with the Crocs. She goes, you know, on second thought, perhaps, sir, we should just cancel that reservation. So I'm like, okay, it's your $800, whatever, you know. So I was not allowed to go to Acquerello. And there's always a, you know, a silver lining to every dark cloud, right? So I made a reservation at Cafe Zuni, which has been there forever. I remember it being like the darling restaurant of San Francisco back in the 80s, middle, late 80s. And I had never been there, always wanted to go. And just for whatever reason, as many times as I was in San Francisco, which is plenty, I never got there. Anyway, so we went there. And it was great. So turned out that we had a great meal. And they serve people Crocs at Zuni, which is nice. And you know, the waiter couldn't have been nicer, and I was reminiscing with him about a restaurant called Stars, which I thought was a brilliant place back in the late 80s, early 90s. It's no longer there. And I said to him, are you old enough to remember Stars? He goes, oh, yeah, man, we had a couple of Christmas parties there, the whole thing. So we were yapping about that and about the owners, Chef Jeremiah Tower, who's a very talented guy. And so yeah, it turns out we had a great night. Good wine, great food, good conversation, you know, nice waiter. And so I'd like to thank Acarello for sending me to Zuni, which was a 10 out of 10 experience. And, you know, maybe next time if I have shoes, I'll make another reservation and get there, you know. But anyway, getting back to Napa, you know, we had a great time up in Napa. It was like, you know, I set up a bunch of wine tastings for us. And my friend Walter came up from, you know, L.A. and met us there. And so it was our routine was you get up, you know, you have coffee or whatever you do in the morning. I like Snapple.
I just broke out in a cold sweat.
What happened?
Because isn't Walter the visitor that came and recorded a show with us?
Yes.
It aired.
Yes.
But he asked to hear it because he was out in California. And lo and behold, nobody can find it.
It disappeared. It's the Phantom Show. It's the show that never happened. So we get up in the morning, Ballast Coffee. I had coffee and I couldn't find any Snapple, so I probably drank coffee. And then we go to tasting, and then we go to lunch, and then you go to wine tasting, go to dinner, and then you drink wine, and then you go to bed, and then it's rinse and repeat for 4 days, 5 days. So we had a great time and went to some great restaurants. If you're ever in Napa, I'm going to give you a couple of recommendations. There's a place right in the city of Napa called Compline, C-O-M-P-L-I-N-E. They have a wine bar and a restaurant. And what's interesting in California is they allow restaurants to sell wine, by the bottle, which you can't do in New York for whatever bureaucratic reason they've decided to, you know, regulate it. But it's in a little alleyway right in the center of town. And it's a very cool little restaurant. Interesting food and a fabulous wine list. I had a really cool red burgundy. What did we have for dinner? We had a board, you know, cheese and meat board with, you know, prosciutto, and they had a couple local cheeses on there, which were really nice. And then a steak tartare, which was really cool. You know, the sommelier came over. I gave him some of the wine. You know, we were tasting the wine with the bartender and the sommelier. It was really a fun night. And then the second night, we went to this place, Torque, T-O-R-C. TORC Torque. And they're kind of like an upscale, you know, trying to get a Michelin star kind of restaurant. And I had my first $50 grilled cheese appetizer, which was interesting. You know, a little truffle cheese. It was very good, actually. And then we had some pastas there, you know, like a mushroom agnolotti, which was done very well. The dough itself was like paper thin. It was really, really well done. And then we had another, like a tubetti kind of pasta with a truffle sauce or whatever. So it was a truffly night. And they wound up talking us into dessert, which I almost never do. And I had a nice chocolate thing there and some of the pistachio thing, if I remember right. And then the next night we were invited. I went to a winery called Kenzo, which if you're interested, I'll tell you about in a minute. But I've been there before, and I'm very fond of the vineyard manager. His name is Pete Hicks. He's a very fun guy and gives a great tour. And, you know, I didn't really take the tour this time because I took it last time. And so we just basically drank some wine and talked about that. And he invited us to dinner at Mustard's, which is a standard bearer restaurant in Napa. It's been there for 42 years. The owner, Cindy Paulson's a very talented chef. This woman's great. She had a place in the city called Fog City Diner, which was kind of like a diner on steroids. You know, a diner had a raw bar and really cool food. It was a little different than what we do here. It was a little more California, a little more hip. But great. So she kind of bills Mustard's as sort of like a truck stop on steroids. You know, it's really a fun place. And they're packed morning, noon, and night. Great restaurant. And I'm thinking what I had. We had a bunch of bottles. They brought a bunch of bottles. You know what the rule was? All these guys brought bottles of wine. And the rule was it couldn't have a 2 in front of the year. It had to be from 19-something. It couldn't be from 2000 and anything. So all the wines were
That's
older.
That's intriguing.
Yeah, it was fun. And then, Val had tamales with mushrooms and I think in leeks, if I'm not mistaken. And then we had, she had a sunchoke soup that was real good. I had a sea bass that was on kind of a succotash of the corn and beans. It was really good. And then we had a dessert. We shared a bunch of stuff. I took a spoonful of whatever it was. I don't remember what it was. Oh, it was a key lime, a lemon meringue tart. It's their signature thing. It comes out. It's about 8 inches high, you know. It's about a half an inch of lemon and about 7.5 inches of meringue. It was real good. A little more meringue than I need, but it was fun. And then the next night we went to a place called La Scala, which is a classic Italian restaurant right in the middle of the village there. And good stuff, man. We had a couple of pastas and a couple of apps, some great Italian wines. I couldn't recommend it highly enough. There's another place that we went to for like a lunch. It was a barbecue place down at the end, right before you go over the railroad tracks there. And I can't remember the name of it. But again, it's just, if you go to Napa, the great part about Napa is it's all about food and wine. That's why people are going there. I didn't hear anybody screaming about gluten or allergies or whatever. Everybody's just having fun. And you know what tipped me off to that early on? Is you're familiar with Thomas Keller, that famous chef now, the French Laundry.
Sure.
Per Se and all that, right?
Per Se also?
Yeah, Per Se. When he was in New York, I remember him being kind of laughed out of the city. He had a place called Raquel down in Manhattan. And he was doing experimental things and whatever. And nobody got it. And he didn't really go there. And he kind of lost the business or was kicked out. I don't remember what happened. Then he went to Checkers Hotel in Los Angeles. And the same thing happened there. They kind of fired him, if I'm not mistaken. And my friend Billy replaced him. I don't know if it was probably a mutual thing, you know. But then he went to Napa and he found his audience. And his audience was people who were really interested in food. He opened up the French Laundry. The rest is history. He's a brilliant chef, obviously, and has had all kinds of accolades. Has been at the top of the food chain for the last 25 years. And it was just a question of him finding his audience. And his audience was in Napa. And it's one of the reasons I went out to, wine country out there. You know, I want to be around the vineyards and the fish and the farms and stuff. You know, you knew you're not going to make a lot of money because it's seasonal as hell out there. But the bottom line is it's just fun to be there. It's fun to be there with people coming out there. They want to enjoy food. They're coming out there for that reason. They're not going out so their friends can see what kind of bag they have or, you know, what their clothes are or what kind of car they're driving. I have to be there because all my people are there or whatever. My friends are there. It's a completely different vibe. But I couldn't recommend, I hadn't been in Napa in a long time up until 2 years ago. And mostly because I'm not a huge fan of the wines out there, but I've been turned around a little bit, man. I had some really good wine out there. David Arthur, if you see it, it's a kind of a high-end cab blends. They make about five or six different kinds of wines. And you may find it in a total wine. It's probably not going to be in your local wine shop because it's sort of specific and it's a little on the pricey side. But if you get a chance and you can, you can see your way clear to spend, $150 on a bottle of wine, I tell you, it's worth every penny. It'll change your life. It's that good.
Wow.
Kenzo's another one. Kenzo was... He's an interesting story. He's a Japanese fellow who, I guess he made all his money in gaming, Street Fighter or that kind of stuff. I'm not so, hip to all of that. But anyway, he's like the Bill Gates of Japan. You know, he's just made a gazillion dollars in this market. And he opened up this place called Kenzo. Somebody was telling me when I was out there that I think Napa's $2 million an acre or something. The land is so valuable. And he bought 3,800 acres. So you can imagine what that comes to in millions, but it's a lot. Anyway, he bought these acres about 2,000 feet up on this mountain, and he planted this vineyard. And he had David Abreu, who is a rock star vineyard manager and has his own winery out there as his vineyard manager. He got Helen Turley to make the wines. I'm pretty sure it was Helen Turley. So he had this all-star cast of people around him. And I got to tell you, the wines are just ridiculous. I mean, just absolutely ridiculous. You know, Walter and Val was, oh my God, this is unbelievable. It was the first one we went to. And another one, if you get a chance and you see Kenzo anywhere and you can make your, you make your way through $150 or $175 for a bottle. I know it's kind of pricey, but boy, I tell you what, it'll change what you think about California wine. It's just brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So, over the past couple of weeks, you've been talking about your new restaurant out east.
Yes.
Not to get deep into it, but you said there might be something coming in Nassau County. But if I'm not mistaken, you said you've decided not to move forward with that. So here we are. Want to talk about the Jamesport restaurant?
It's in Southold, actually.
Southold.
Yeah, it's called Southold Social. And my partner opened it up a couple of years ago with a fella who, I guess the partnership didn't work out or whatever. And he bought him out, so he asked me if I would come in. I didn't want to do it initially because of the other guy who I knew for a long time. And although I'm a fan of his food and his stuff, I wasn't too much a fan of his personality. So I didn't do it. And at this stage of my life, I don't want to make any gross boo-boos. You know what I mean? It's like I'm getting too close to the end to screw it all up. So anyway, he bought him out. And he said to me, you know, would you like to come in here and help me out with this thing? I could use a hand, you know, changing the vibe of the place and whatever. So I said, all right, I'll do that. You know, and it's kind of exciting for me. It's in my DNA. You know, I just had a friend of mine yesterday go, what are you doing? You know, I said, I don't know. This is what I do. You know, it is what I do. So I'm going to go in there. I'm going to change it around. It should be ready by 2 weeks from now. I should be ready to do the grand reopening, you know. So we've been working on some menu things and some changes to the place. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun, actually. I think it's a beautiful place. It's a restored house that was originally called, began with a C. I can't think of the name. It was an Italian restaurant initially. It was the restaurant that brought Marco Pellegrino, my dear friend who owns Umbra, Osteria Umbra in Smithtown. And he came over here to do that restaurant. I can't think of the name of it now. It began with a C, like Chete or something. Anyway, he did a great job there. But well, for whatever reason, it didn't work out with the landlord. And anyway, he moved on. He's opened up this really great restaurant in Smithtown called Osteria Umbra. If you ever get a chance, just go there. It's fabulous. So anyway, it was done with, you know, the inside is really beautiful. It's got, you know, the exposed beams on the ceilings, and it's got an upstairs, seats about 25 people for private parties. It has a little outside patio area, and it seats about another 70 people. And then beyond, there's a barn there. Beyond the barn, there's an area where if I wanted to do like a little live music thing or an outside, you know, kind of jazzy, clubby kind of thing at night, which I probably won't do, but it's available. So I think you're going to like it. It's, you know, it's a sort of a modern American menu with a lot of different ways to go. I mean, you know, a lot of share plates and things like that, that people can have fun ordering a couple of things and split them up. And if you want to go, it's just east of the village of Southold on the north side of the street, maybe about, I don't know, quarter mile to a little more than a quarter mile beyond the village, right past that, I guess it's an IGA supermarket there on the right. It's just a little bit further up on the left-hand side. Small sign, so it's easy to miss, but, you know, keep your eye out. It's a white sign with a blue circle.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So I'm infatuated by cooking. That's why I'm very humbled to be able to sit beside you or across from you and have had the opportunity to actually visit you while you're in the kitchen preparing and cooking.
Uh-huh.
So I was watching a show on the Catholic cable channel with Monsignor Jim.
I love him. He's a good guy.
And he said he had collaborated on a recipe with Lydia Bastianich.
Yeah.
Who apparently is a Long Islander. And
she lives in Douglaston.
We'd love to have her back on the show. We probably had her on about
she's
10
great.
Years ago.
She's the nicest lady, too. She's your typical Italian grandma, you know.
So another added homework assignment, if anybody in our audience has contact information for Lydia's team, we'd love to have you share it with us so we can reach out. But the item that they were preparing, or he was preparing again, but it had been a collaboration, was Italian meatloaf, which was intriguing. So
it's like a meatball with a different shape.
Almost, not quite. So to get into it, it was made with, I think he said 20-80 chopped meat.
Yeah.
And he said that left...
That's 20% fat, 80% meat.
So it said it left enough in there to...
To
flavor it.
Yeah.
So it included, just like it was a meatball, day-old or old bread that he had soaked in milk.
Yeah.
And then he folded it into the meat.
Uh-huh.
And then he put ricotta in and mixed that in. And... chunks of Parmesan, I believe it was, And there were spices or whatever.
Sure.
And then he molded it into a loaf, not too high because right. he wanted
you
want, it to...
You don't want it rare or something, yeah.
And he put it into a glass baking tray
right.
That had parchment paper on the bottom,
yeah.
Which he said would be great to make a gravy or yeah. a sauce. And watching him prepare it was incredible. I guess he topped it. Well, actually, he placed it on a bed of sauce, red tomato sauce.
Yeah.
He actually used a brand. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Michael's of Brooklyn.
Don't know it.
He says that's the best sauce
oh, yeah.
in his mind that comes out of a jar.
Well, he eats a lot, you know.
So, but they plated it with that as a base,
uh-huh.
a nice slice of the meatloaf, and it looked incredible. It really, really, really did.
He's fun, you know. I've done a couple of shows with him, and there's a story that I can't tell you about on the radio. Because the FCC will knock me right off. But if you want to hear about how I turned Telecare into the Playboy Channel, just pick up my second book, Playing With I'm Second Helping. And it's in there. It's in there. I did a faux pas, or as my friend Jimmy would say, a pas fou.
And this was in book one?
This was in book two.
Book two. And the name again?
Second Helping.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I did a Lulu of a faux pas. Anyway,
so the side dish for the Italian meatloaf was Italian mashed potatoes, which was made with olive oil and butter. And obviously he peeled the potatoes and everything. He said, not a big fan of peeling potatoes.
It's
he goes, you know, that was like for the young one at the in the household for a Sunday dinner if they were being made. But
the altar boys to do that. You know?
It really, really intrigued me. Then there was also another show that I watched, and they made, I think they called it Shanghai Noodles.
Uh-huh.
It was, trying to think of what was in it. It was called oil noodles or something.
Oil noodles?
But it was sauteed in a wok, and yeah. They had bok choy in it, uh-huh. and I'm starting to, I can't do it myself, so I have to watch the experts be able to prepare.
It's culinary voyeurism. I mean, you know, it's...
There you go.
Yeah, and it's fun. Listen, I do the same thing. I mean, I'm a student of the game after all these years. You know, I watch all these shows. You know, I probably drive Val crazy because I'm constantly, you know, I get the remote, you know, because I'm the guy. You know, got to be the remote guy, right? So, every once in a while, she'll go, can we please watch something else, you know? And I know she's had enough. But, I constantly pick up things that, you know, whether I'm watching Diners and Drivers and Dives or Q, Barbecue and Stew or whatever it is, all those shows, you know, you always pick up something, you know, I hadn't thought of that. Man, that's a pretty good idea. And I also pick up stuff, like, oh, my God, I wouldn't do that if it was the last dinner on earth kind of thing. But there's always something to be learned. I mean, that's why I go out to eat all the time. I don't eat home. And I'm constantly looking for inspiration. You know, I read 3 or 4 magazines a month. I have 700 cookbooks or whatever the hell it is. And you know, I'm constantly trying to up the game, you know. And no matter where you go, like, I don't care if it's a diner or a 3-star Michelin restaurant, I will find something that I'll either take and I'll put it in the archives. And I'll either use it or make sure I never use it, you know, because there's that too. I mean, you find things that oh my God, I'd never do that. You know, I was out the other night, I went to Uncle Frank's with Dorio and his wife. And fun little restaurant, man, if you're ever in Wantagh, it's right by the Wantagh train station on the south side. It's a great little place. If you're just looking for pasta pizza, I mean, his dough is incredible. His pastas are great. It's Chris. You know, he's been on the show. He owns Blackbird also, which is another cool little restaurant. Anyway, we were there, and everybody knows that my one pet peeve about, well, I have a couple, but my major pet peeve about dining room staff is when they come to the table and announce who they are and tell me they'll be waiting on me this evening. You know, I had a feeling it was the apron, the pad, the pencil. You know, it's like... I can't take it. I don't know who started this whole trend. Anyway, so she comes to the table. Hi, I'm Stephanie. I'll be your waiter this evening. And everybody starts to giggle because, you know, it's like fingernails on a blackboard to me. You know, it's a sound I don't want to hear. But it's other than that, it's a fabulous restaurant. If you ever want to go there, check it out. Uncle Frank's. Have you been there?
I have.
Yeah, isn't it? Don't you love it?
I was there once. Unfortunately, I was there.
Oh, no.
On Passover. And I guess I have my own rules. You're not supposed to eat bread products or pasta, I believe. I'll eat pasta. I won't eat
leavened bread.
Bread.
Even
flatbread.
Yeah.
So
matzah is kind of like a flatbread. It's a cracker, right?
Yeah. So I don't remember if I ate the pizza, but I know I had some pasta. It was very nice. In the day, it was difficult to get in. It was so popular.
Yeah, it still is, I think. You know, well, why would you go there if you?
Well, I was with a group. I was with a group of people, I was there. But I wanted to ask you again. I gave this very vague story about the Asian meal,
the Shanghai noodles.
But are you a proponent of preparing Asian noodle dishes, or that's not your thing? You might enjoy it at a restaurant, but you're not going to go produce it.
No, I mean, I've done a little of that, you know, more on the Japanese side than the Chinese side because they're completely different. And it's a cuisine I'm not all that familiar with. I don't eat a lot of Chinese food. Mostly for lunch, if I'm in a hurry, there's a little takeout place in Manitouk, and they have a couple tables there. I'll go get shrimp and broccoli or something if I'm starving. But that's about the extent of it. I don't really eat. I love the soups. I love good hot and sour soup. I like wonton soup's always fun, you know. But for the most part, that's pretty much it. I don't really eat a lot of lo mein or any of that stuff, so I don't know what's in it offhand. I'd have to look and have to reference it. But Japanese noodles, I do. I do a seaweed and soba noodle salad. You know, I do some. I'll do some glass noodles sometimes in a dish if I'm steaming some fish or whatever. But that's the extent of it. For me, pasta is Italian. I kind of stay in that zone. I don't know enough about Chinese cuisine and the flavors to really nail it, you know. So I'd have to go off a recipe, and it's not really what I do. They say, I mean, there's five, from what I understand, from what I've read, there's five distinct cuisines in China. It's Sichuan, Hunan, whatever the other three are, I don't know.
Cantonese,
probably.
What is Hunan?
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. I'm really not familiar. I think Hunan province is northern China. I could be wrong on that too, but there's something in my mind tells me that's what it is. And it's funny because, you know, I studied Kung Fu for a bunch of years, and the style I studied was from the north, you know, North China. It's called the Hung. It was a five animal, you know, Kung Fu. Anyway, when I was doing that, I was going into the city a lot and doing some Chinese restaurants, but it's just not my favorite genre, you know. I'd much rather eat other things because it doesn't apply to what I do. And I guess I could, you know, work those things in, but I don't know. There's so much other stuff out there, and I'm not good at that. So, you know, I've learned that I was talking to Steve Vai one time, who's arguably one of the best guitar players on the planet, and he said to me, you know, I was trying to do this alternate picking thing, which I wasn't very good at. And I kept working at it. I was getting better at it. And I say to him, it's just tripping me up. He goes, stop. He says, don't do it. I said, what do you mean? He says, work on what you're good at. He says, forget what you're lousy at. You know what I mean? He goes, you'll probably always be lousy at it. He says, I never did that. He says, things I'm lousy on a guitar, which is incredible for me. I can't even believe he's such a monster, you know. He goes, I just concentrated on my strengths. And I forgot about my weaknesses. And I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty good idea, you know? So I kind of do that with cooking. Chinese cuisine would be a weakness for me. So I just kind of leave it to the Chinese and people who are better at it, you know?
Gotcha. So we're still in the middle of the winter as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
And what would be a hearty dish to prepare? If it was what we just went through, you know, this cold weather, windy, snowy, I know we're expecting some high temperatures in the mid 30s and low 40s coming.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, what's a go-to again, winter hearty meal that you might prepare?
I'll give you the easiest one I can think of, and one that has a million variations where you're only really limited by your imagination, is chili. And, you know, you can make it hot, you can make it not hot, you know, I mean spicy, I don't mean, you know, heat-wise, I'm talking about spice-wise. And you can use chopped meat, you can use short rib, you can use filet mignon trim, you can use chicken, lobster, shrimp, pork, a combination of all of them, a combination of none of them, you can use vegetarian. I mean, it's just, it's limitless, and it's hearty, and it's warming, and it's, you know, it's that winter kind of tuck in. And
so I'm intrigued now. So, you know, you talked about different meats. I mean, I had actually, it wasn't a chili, it was more of a stew at Super Bowl the other night. It was a venison stew.
Nice.
But if you're making a chili,
right.
Some chilies are thick,
uh-huh.
and some are a brothy.
Yeah.
If you're doing a seafood, are you using, you know, like a tomato sauce and
you can do that. You can use tomato. You don't have to. You can use, you know, like a fish stock or a chicken stock or a, you know, shellfish broth or whatever. I mean, you know, it's like, that's what I'm saying, is you really only, limited by your imagination. And I think that, you know, there's a base that I start with, you know. If you're going to do any kind of a meat chili, whether it's beef, pork, chicken, whatever, I always start with bacon. And bacon, you know, the pork gives it a lot of flavor. And if you can't eat pork for whatever reason, religious, you know, spiritual, leave it out. But I always start with bacon, and I brown the bacon. And then I add my vegetables. I usually do a combination of colored peppers. If you want to make it a little bit spicy, use hatch chilies. They're fun. They're like green, and they look like a elongated green pepper, but they're very flavorful. And then saute them down with some garlic, and then I would put the meat in there and brown the meat, whether it's chopped meat or pork, chicken, whatever. And then I add.
So wait, are you the type? I mean, you can have chopped meat,
right.
You can have shredded meat,
mm-hmm.
and you can have chunks of meat.
Right.
What's your
Well, it depends on how long you want to cook it. Your chunks will become shredded if you leave it in there long enough. You know, that's what happens. But as long as they're tender, it doesn't matter. You know, you can leave it chunky. But, you know, after you get your meat in there, you brown it, then you want to put your spice group in there. You know, chili powder. I use smoked paprika. I use cinnamon in there. I use coriander in there. Garlic, you know, garlic powder. And then just make sure you cook that out a little bit, because that'll release the flavors in the oils. It'll release the flavors of the spices. And then I add a little tomato product. I add a little vinegar. Sometimes I'll use chili sauce, because that has vinegar in it. You want to do that, you know. And I'll add a little stock, whether it's beef stock or chicken stock or whatever. And then I'll just cook that down. And at the end, I'll finish it with dark chocolate, a little bit of dark chocolate.
Mm.
Yeah. And then you want to serve it. I also use a little chopped cilantro in there. I think that's a fun thing to have in there. But when you serve it, you can serve it with little bowls of, you know, sour cream. People like cheese in there. I'm not a big cheese fanatic. But
Other than beans, are you a proponent of using vegetables and, you know?
If you're going to do a vegetarian chili, yeah. If not, I forgot the beans. You always add some kind of bean in there, whether it's kidney bean or I like black beans a lot. They're a little smaller, and I think they're kind of cool. But again, a combination of, you can just do a bean chili. You don't need to put any meat in there if you want the protein, you know, that vegetables won't give you. You know, just throw the beans in there.
And plating it?
Plating is a bowl, you know. I like it with rice, believe it or not, you know, on a bed of rice. Polenta's fun, too. Polenta's not as popular as I think it should be. It's fabulous. It's like, you know, better flavored mashed potato, you know. So polenta, I like. You know, chili is kind of a Mexican thing, so, you know, Mexicans eat a lot of rice, so it's fine on rice. But I think it's one of those, you know, gut-warming, cold weather, you know. And spices, you know, there's we didn't talk about that. I mean, you know, if you want to heat it up, they sell these canned chipotle peppers in the store, and chipotles are basically a smoked jalapeno, and they preserve it in this adobo sauce in a can, and they're very powerful. But you can chop one of those and throw that in there, or you can use Tabasco or Cholula, any kind of hot sauce that you want. Or if you want, like the other night, I made some for Super Bowl, and my friend's wife doesn't like anything spicy, so I made it very unspicy with, we had a couple of different choices of a hot sauce on the side. And then people serve it with a little sour cream and, you know, onions. Sometimes I want raw onion. Again, I'm not a big fan of that, but if you like raw onion, you put that on there. A little bit of sour cream, a little cilantro sprigs. You know, if you like cheese, cheddar is probably the cheese of choice. You know, you shred up some cheddar. And I would serve that in bowls so people could, you know, add it as they like. Some people like a little more sour cream. My granddaughter had some last night, and it looked almost white. You know, it was like, I said, why don't you have a little chili with your sour cream? You know, it was completely, she ate more sour cream than chili. It was hilarious. But anyway, it's the one dish that I think that you can touch all bases on. Vegetarians, I don't eat pork. Okay, fine, here's the meat. Oh, I love pork. Here's the pork. I don't either. But I like chicken. Here's the chicken. You can do turkey chili. You know, they have ground turkey and ground chili. If you go to Stu Leonard's, you'll find packets of that. It's easy to do, too, and it comes together quickly. I mean, if you're going to do it with meat, like chunks of meat, it's going to take a little longer for those meat chunks to braise down and be tender. But if you're using chopped meat, you can put the whole thing together in 15 minutes, you know, 20 minutes. And, you know, after you simmer it for, I don't know, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, you're good, you know, under an hour. And you got this fabulous meal. And the good part about chili is it gets better as it sits. You know, it's like tomato products sometimes. If you know, put it in the refrigerator and forget about it for a day or two, the spices and everything else seems to bloom and meld together a little better, you know. So it's a good day after dish. It's also a great way to get rid of leftovers, right? You have chicken, you went to Boston Market, if they're still around, or you went to some takeout place, Zorn's, and you got chicken, and you got a whole bunch left over in there, just shred up the chicken, make the chili with that. You have steak left over from the night before, chop it up, and pork chops, put it in. You got vegetables that are getting a little long in the tooth, you know, in your refrigerator, chop them up, you got chili. It's just, it's a fabulous vehicle. And again, it's things that are born out of poverty that I tend to love. It's, you know, the lesser cuts of meat, or grandma's thinking of how to feed a family of five with, you know, no money. And, you know, they come up with these brilliant things, and chili's a byproduct of that.
And again, you mentioned seafood. Is that something that, you know, is it almost like a jambalaya?
Well, kind of, but it's just flavored differently. And you could kind of like make that case. It's just flavored differently. You know, jambalaya is, it's got sausage in it.
So you mentioned fish real quick, because I know we're coming to the end of the show. Would you use, you know, fish, or you're talking about shellfish?
Shellfish, yeah. Yeah, you could, you know, tuna's too oily, salmon's too strong for that. You know, flounder will just disappear. You know, maybe you can make a case for monkfish or something like that. It has a little firmer
texture.
So
you said lobster, shrimp. What about clams, mussels, oysters?
Clams and mussels, because the longer you cook them, the more chewy they get, you know.
Oh, is that true?
If you want to just throw them in at the end, yeah. But I would stick with the, you know, shrimp and lobster. And I would do it, I used to make a lobster and black bean chili that actually won a couple of contests, you know, chili contests. I have a... You know, I got a trophy at home with a lobster on it or whatever, you know, it's hilarious. But the bottom line is that it's just different, you know, and you know, I make it's more complicated, you know, now I make a lobster stock and, you know, cook it down. So it's a little more complicated than that. But you can just make a white chili. You can do white chilies, too. You don't have to have tomato in it. You just do it with stock. So if you look on the internet, there's a million recipes on the internet. You know, to give you one here would be a fool's errand, but... You know, if you look on the internet, there's a whole bunch of recipes there. You'll have a lot of fun with it. And again, you can just, you know, you can start to up your chili game. And, you know, this week it's that. Next week it's pork. And I'm going to try a white one. I'm going to try a vegetarian one. It's a whole lot of fun.
All is well here in the land of playing with fire.
Yes, and we're going to leave that right there and end the show with Tom Strachey's The Life, which is Life is Too Short to Drink Bad Wine, Treat Every Meal Like It Was Your Last, and Keep Chocolate in Your Life as Important as Sex and Pizza. And I got to tell you something. Somebody recognized me by my voice on a line in Stop and Shop. I went to get the chili stuff, you know, to make for Mike's party. And a guy says to me, hey, is your name Tom? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I recognize your voice from the radio show. I'm like, well, thank you for listening. And I had a little conversation with him. It was pretty funny.
That's very cool. But real quick, we forgot all about that. Yesterday was Valentine's Day.
Ah, that's right. That's right.
So,
well, it's too late to give tips.
It is, but...
My tip is make reservations early.
And I'll say that we love our audience and our listeners, and the greatest gift and our pleasure would be to tell others about what we do here at Playing With Fire.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Come on now, everybody. Get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
Introducing Smoking Al's new fantasy platters. The whole gang can have fun feasting on each one of these enormous oversized platters, whether at home or in the dining room. Try the new Macho Nacho, the Bow Wow Wow, the Poo Poo Platter, the Caesar Pleaser, barbecue egg rolls, chicken wings, and a whole lot more. Smoking Al's, Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.